Aaron Kyle is one of the most amazing people that I know. I actually came down to the downtown location about a year ago to start leading here, and she was one of the main leaders that welcomed me in and made sure that I felt completely comfortable and that I belonged here. That's something that I love so much about Hoboken Grace, and that's something that I see in Erin every time she serves. She has this uncanny ability to make people feel at home, to make people feel welcomed, and make people feel loved. She's been serving with us for years, and she's now become the First Impressions leader. And the amount of dedication and time that she spends with her team blows my mind. It just gives us such an opportunity to impact others by doing the incredible things that she does week in and week out. And a lot of times it's not just on Sundays. She is making sure that everything is getting done throughout the week and wanting to make sure that the space is perfect for when anybody comes in, that they can just feel right at home. And it blows my mind how dedicated and how much love she shows every Sunday. And she has made me feel so comfortable, even when there are times when I'm personally stressed out or I'm going through things, and she is just there to be this kind of rock for me. And I think that's what makes her so vital to our team and makes her so vital here at Hoboken Grace, because she really knows God's mission to love other people, to serve other people, and to give back. And she will do whatever she can to make that possible. And I'm just so excited that we get an opportunity to celebrate Erin. It's such an opportunity for us to just be able to remind ourselves of the incredible people that we have here serving in our community and the incredible things that she does every day. And I'm just so thankful to have her as part of my team, to have her as one of my leaders, and just to have her in my life. So Erin, I thank you so very much for everything that you do.
If you haven't been with us for the past couple of weeks, we're super excited to have you. My name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace. And right now we're in the middle of this series called Ultimate Fans. And we've just been celebrating different people within our family and different people who are making an impact and serving in really unique ways, and specifically people that you don't necessarily get to see very often. And I don't know if Erin's still here. She usually leads at the beginning of the day and sometimes comes in near the end. But if you know Erin, I want to encourage you to reach out and encourage her, because she really is a phenomenal part of our team and just serves you relentlessly, week after week after week, and just trying to make sure that from the moment that you walk in, that you know that this is a place that you can call home. And as I said, for the last couple of weeks, we've been in the midst of this conversation called Ultimate Fans. We've been looking at encouraging and how we can begin to encourage one another and how God is working to encourage us. We've been learning some really unique things about this thing called the church and about the God that we serve, this God that the Bible describes as the God who encourages the discouraged. And despite what you may have heard of him, the scriptures tell us that he's working to, in our lives, bring encouragement over and over and over again. And so throughout this series, what I've been trying to do is to step into your life, and rather than challenging you to encourage, I just want to encourage you. And I hope that throughout the series, you've been taking that and beginning, and you've begun to encourage those around you as well. Because as Jesus is bringing this thing together that will eventually be called the church, this thing that we're participating in today and that we're a part of, he says, this is what I want for you to do in the lives of each other. I want you to love each other. That's the primary thing. And then as we learn coming into the series, the second thing that we're told to do or that we're instructed in as you look throughout the New Testament more than anything else is this idea of encouraging. That as we come together and as we interact with one another, it's just supposed to be this constant encouragement that we're building one another up, lifting one another up, that we're helping each other be more than we were before. And so what we're doing in this series, I just want to encourage you. We've been walking through some really encouraging things about who God is. And maybe some of those things that that hinder us from receiving encouragement, and mistakes that we've made, or ways that we've viewed God that aren't correct, or ways that we viewed ourselves that aren't correct. And we've been working through, okay, how do we adjust that so that we can not only talk about encouragement, but we can actually receive encouragement. We can actually be encouraged. And my prayer for you, my hope for you, is that as we walk through this series, that you'll just be filled with encouragement. And the beauty of this journey that God is leading you into, that he's leading us into together. And for me, encouragement has everything to do with mission, because I want to live a life that's significant. I want to do something that matters. And one of the things I've found is that as you're on this journey with God, the more that you experience him, the more you're going to want to do for him, the more you're going to want to be able to bring what you're experiencing with him to the world around you. And so the more you experience his love, the more you're going to want others to experience his love. The more you experience his grace, the more you're going to want others to understand and experience his grace. And sometimes it's so frustrating because you're experiencing his amazing love and grace, and then you're talking to those around you about who God is, and you can see that they think that he's someone totally different than who he actually is. And you're trying to be used in their life in a way that they can actually see it, that they can actually get it, but it's a struggle. And the more that I experience God, the more that I want to be used by God. I think that's true for almost all of us. And for those of you who are beginning your journey, you're going to experience this. But as you begin to step into this idea of being used by God, one of the things that you're going to encounter right from the beginning is this sense or this uncomfortableness, this question, if you will, of whether or not you could actually be used. And there are all sorts of different things that play into this. I think when you start to step into this idea of, you know what, God, I want you to use me. I want to play a significant role in this story. I think one of the first things that hits you is just the incredible scope of what's ahead of you. The incredible task that's before us if we're going to try to bring God's love to the world around us, because it's almost unending. The possibilities are unending. The task is unending. It's huge. And one of the things that you're instantly confronted with, if you're going to say, okay, God, I want you to use me, you're immediately going to be confronted with just how much there is to do. But not only are you confronted with how much there is to do, you're also confronted with just how inadequate you are. And it doesn't matter who you are. When you look at how much needs to be done, or when you look at this idea of, you know, I really want for my coworkers to understand how God works, and you start to think through, how am I going to do that? I don't care who you are. You're going to find yourself in a situation where you feel inadequate, because you're trying to see something happen in someone's life that's more than just intellectual. It's more than just, okay, how good are you at having a conversation? There's a spiritual element to it. And so you're confronted with the fact that, man, I want this to happen, but I don't see how I could possibly make this happen. And you're confronted with the fact, and I'm confronted with this all the time, I don't have all the answers. I don't know. I don't know how to get from here to there. I don't know how to make this happen. I don't know. And then beyond that, you go back to the conversation a couple of weeks ago, you're also confronted with your own failures and the times that you're like, man, I want for people to see how God is loving and forgiving, and then your coworker does something and you blow up. And you just lose it because it's the 15th time they've done the same stupid thing 15 times in a row. And so finally you just lose it. And then in that moment you're like, oh, I don't know if God could ever use me. I remember this growing up in high school, wanting so much for my friends to know who God was, but then my own struggles in my life, I became obsessed with them, because I was like, man, when they look at my life and how I'm screwed up, how are they ever going to believe that God is who I say he is? And I was just confronted with my inadequacies and my faults and my failures. And you come to this point, you're like, I want to be used. I want to be a significant part of this, but I don't know. I don't know if I ever can be. And then you start this journey. It's kind of a weird journey, and maybe you're aware of it mentally, maybe you aren't, but you start this journey of chances. You're kind of counting chances. You're like, okay, well, you know what? I want to be used, so God, I want you to help me to be able to use me in the life of my family, because I want my family to know who God is so desperately. And so you go in and you're trying to engage them with this, but you get into family dynamics and things get weird, right? And you're like, no, God loves you. And they say something to you and you're like, I hate you, but God loves you. And you're trying to help and you blow it. And you're like, oh, I know I blew it. And God, but you're like, God, well, you know, maybe God will give me a second chance. And you start down this road of chances. And, well, you know what? God gave me a second chance, so I'm going to try to take advantage of this chance. Or even as leaders, sometimes I see this, where people will step into leadership, and they're like, man, I want God to use me in the life of my dinner group. I want him to use me on this team, or I want him to use me in all these different ways. And they step into this, and like, okay, you know, God's given me this chance, and so I'm trying to take advantage of this chance. I'm hoping that God will use me in this chance, but then something goes wrong. They're like, oh, I blew it. And it's like, well, maybe God will give me a second chance. Or for some of us, we've blown it so many times that we just begin to believe, you know what? There's no way there's any more chances. And I used to think that maybe God could use me. I used to think that maybe I could be a significant part of the story. But now, I think for some of us, we've given up. And there's a lot of different reasons why we've given up. But for some of us, I think that we've given up. And I want to tell you today, it's really easy to get there. And if you're there, I want to take you to a story because I think that God wants to pull you out of that this morning. And I want to address a few things that maybe you're experiencing in your heart, and hopefully call you back to the truth of who God is, that maybe you'll experience for the first time that he's not at all, and he's trying to prove this to us time and time again, right? That he's not at all who we thought he was. I want to take you to the story of a man who's actually quite popular. As a matter of fact, even if you've never been to church before, you probably know his name. You might not, but you probably do. There's a lot of movies that have been made about him. And throughout the service, I'm aware of the fact that you guys know we have baptisms this afternoon, right? Which is going to be incredible. We had two baptisms earlier. And whenever we have baptisms, we pop champagne. I'll just give it away for those of you who are with us for the first time. But because we pop champagne, the floor gets really sticky. So if you hear this, right, don't let it distract you. It's just celebration noise, okay? And so as I walk around, I'm aware of that, and I just pointed it out to you, so you'll be aware of it constantly as well. But I want to take you to this story. The movies have been made about this guy. He's unbelievably famous. He's famous historically, not just scripturally. He's famous historically because he played a phenomenal role in the development of what is the nation of Israel. His name is Moses. There's a movie that's going to be coming out in a couple of weeks that's going to be telling the story of Moses. Whenever there's a movie coming out telling a story that's in the scriptures, I always get a little bit nervous. Like, where are they going to go with this? And kind of like Noah, they make up most of it. But as you go into this story, and in a few weeks when you get a chance to be able to see his story, I want to share with you a story before you get there. So that you'll be able to see what's inaccurate, for one thing. But then also, I think that there's incredible encouragement in this story for those of us who find ourselves in a place where we're wondering, is it really possible that God could use me again? Now, in order to understand the encouragement, you have to go to the beginning of the story. And I think a lot of times when we tell the story of Moses, we start from the moment that he encounters God at the burning bush. But in order to understand what happens in Moses' conversation with God as he encounters God in this very personal way on Mount Sinai, you have to understand the backstory. And so we don't have time to read through the whole thing, but I want to give you the backstory this morning because it's really, really important to understanding Moses and what God is doing in Moses' story, because Moses' story is much more complicated than we usually give it credit for. Because Moses grows up in what might have been one of the most conflicted situations you could possibly imagine. You see, there was this family that was led by a man named Israel, formerly known as Jacob. They had relocated to the nation of Egypt. And as they're in this nation of Egypt, they begin to multiply. As a matter of fact, they become more and more powerful. There's tons of them. They're literally like bunnies. They're popping up everywhere, okay? And I don't know what was happening. Apparently, they're very fertile because the nation of Egypt is becoming threatened by how quickly they're multiplying and how many of them there are and how God is blessing them, not just with children, but their possessions. They're getting richer. They're beginning to become a threat to the very nation of Egypt. And so the nation of Egypt, the Pharaoh decides, you know, we got to do something about this. So in order to be able to control this, they decide, okay, we're going to take this family that's becoming this huge group of people, and we're going to make them slaves. And we're going to force them to work for us. And this should keep them under control. This should kind of stop this spread. I don't know exactly how he thought that would work. I don't know if he thought, you know, if they're slaves, the men will be tired at night, so they'll stop multiplying so quickly. I don't know. Some of you will get that joke in a little bit. I don't know what it was that he thought would stop this by making them slaves, but then they make them slaves thinking that would control them. The problem is they just continue to multiply, and they're getting bigger and bigger and bigger and stronger and stronger and stronger, even as slaves. And so it finally comes to the point where the Pharaoh steps in and says, listen, we've got to stop this multiplication. So he says, here's what I want you to do. I want every single Hebrew boy, so every boy that's born to this family, that's becoming this nation, says, I want them killed. I want you to kill every last one of them. And when they're born, I want you to take them, I want you to throw them in the river and let them drown. This is like mass murder. That he begins to carry out throughout this family. And these babies are being killed one after another, after another, after another, after another, after another, after another. And it's into this really feel-good situation that Moses is born. And the truth is, Moses should have died the moment that he was born. He should have died. But instead, his mom decides, listen, we can't keep him here because if we keep him here, they're going to find him and they're going to kill him. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to take this basket and we're going to make it so that it can float, and we're going to put him in the river. But we're not going to put him in the river to drown. We're just going to put him in the river and see what God's going to do. And they put the top over this thing. They put him in the river, and then his sister is set up to be able to watch him and just watch and see what happens. There's still a good chance that he's going to die. But she's sitting there watching, and all of a sudden, as she's sitting there watching, all of a sudden, Pharaoh's daughter comes to the river. And Pharaoh's daughter comes to the river, and she's alerted to this basket, and she realizes that there's this baby inside this basket. Now, what is she going to do? Well, she does what every obedient daughter does. She decides to keep it. And again, it's one of these situations where as you're reading through the scriptures, it can be really easy to just kind of read through the story and just like, okay, blah, 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 blah. And especially if you've heard it before, if you've heard the story, it's be really easy to pick up the book of Exodus and just kind of read through the details. Oh, yeah, whatever, whatever. But listen to what's happening, okay? The Pharaoh, the most powerful person in the known world, says, this baby's supposed to die. His daughter finds it and decides to keep it. This is setting up for a beautiful home, okay? This is like setting up for great family dynamics. And it's not that they don't know that the baby's Hebrew. They know. She knows. As a matter of fact, Moses' sister comes out and says to her, hey, listen, you know, I can get one of the Hebrew women to help take care of this baby. And Pharaoh's daughter says, that would be great. And so Miriam, knowing who the mother is, goes and gets Moses' mother. And Moses ends up being raised for a while by his mother. The whole time being protected by Pharaoh's daughter. And then eventually Moses goes to live in the palace, which means that Pharaoh, every time he comes in contact with Moses, is confronted by the fact that his daughter didn't obey him. As a parent, that's always fun. Always fun. And you have this crazy dynamic. Not only do you have this crazy dynamic of Pharaoh's daughter disobeying her dad in order for Moses to live, but then she brings this Hebrew kid who's clearly a threat to Pharaoh because he's already taking crazy moves to eliminate the Hebrews, who's clearly a threat to Pharaoh, brings him into the palace, and he begins to grow up in the palace. You have that dynamic on one side. On the other side, you have this crazy dynamic where Moses knows who he is. He knows he's a Hebrew. Not only does he know he's a Hebrew, he's raised for a while by his mother, who's a Hebrew. You know what she taught him? To be Hebrew. And he's growing up inside this palace while he knows that his entire family is consistently being driven into the ground as slaves to the people he lives with. Not only that, all of his cousins, all of his family that he was supposed to grow up with, you know who killed him? The guy he lives with. Pharaoh killed all of the people he was supposed to grow up with. And there are some times in the movies where it portrays that Pharaoh has this like really close relationship with Moses. It's really tough to read the beginning of Exodus and think that that's possible. Because you read the beginning of the book of Exodus, there's this crazy tension. This crazy tension. And then Moses decides that he's going to begin to investigate, okay, what's going on with my people? Because I think that he cares. I wouldn't be surprised if from the very beginning his mother and father had drilled into him, listen, look at what God's done for you. Look at how God saved you. Look where God's positioned you. Now you're going to be in the palace. Guess what? You can finally do something about the family. You're the one who can finally do something. No one else has any influence. No one else has any power whatsoever, but you. Look at what God's done for you. Look at how you've been saved. Look at this amazing miracle that took place, that you've been adopted into Pharaoh's household. This is crazy. And so as Moses is growing up, he finally decides that he's going to go out and see, okay, what can I do? As you read through the story, you see that he goes out and he's watching one of his people once again be abused. He's grown up with this tension his whole life. Knowing this reality, living in the midst of this reality, and he's watching one of his people be abused once again, literally be beaten in front of him, and as he does, he finally snaps. He snaps. And he kills the guy. Another reason why I don't think that Pharaoh had a great relationship with Moses is because from the moment that Pharaoh finds out, there's no hesitation. From the moment Pharaoh finds out, it's Moses must die. I think for quite some time, Pharaoh had probably been looking for an opportunity to kill Moses. And I don't think it's because Pharaoh was just really, really concerned with morality. I don't think he thought, well, Moses must die because that's the right thing to do. You're talking about a guy who slaughtered children. He could care less about who lives and who dies. He could care less about what the right thing to do was. I doubt if his other sons had killed someone, there would have been any punishment whatsoever. They're the Pharaoh's sons. But this was a Hebrew. And he finally crossed the line. And so he had to die. So Moses flees. Unfortunately, he escapes. And as you read through the story, you find him wandering through the wilderness. He's a shepherd. He's working for his father-in-law, and basically he's just settled into, you know what, I'm just gonna be a shepherd the rest of my life. Do you ever think that he sat there at night wondering what could have been? Do you ever think that he laid in bed at night wondering, if I hadn't lost my temper, could I have actually done something for my mom, who's still a slave? Could I have actually done something for my dad, who's still being beaten? My brother, who still works in that pit? If I hadn't lost my temper, could I? I was the one who had a chance to make a difference. I was the one who had the influence and the power. And my mom and my sister, they told me about the river. I was the one who got pulled out of the river. What if I hadn't lost my temper? What could God have done with me then? But for me, it's over. I blew it. It's over. I had my chance. And so he just settles in until one day God pursues him. I want to pick up the story in Exodus chapter 3. And in Exodus chapter 3, you find the story of the burning bush. But I want to bring it to you, understanding what we know of the story leading up to it. Because I think it changes the way that we look at Moses' objections. Let me show you. Exodus chapter 3, beginning in verse 2, it says, "There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in a blazing fire from the middle of a bush. Moses stared in amazement." So he comes across this fire, and he's like, man, this thing's burning, but it's not going out. It should go out because there's really no more fuel for it, but it just keeps burning. He says, "This is amazing," Moses said to himself. "Why isn't that bush burning up? I must go see it." When the Lord saw Moses coming to take a closer look, God called to him from the middle of the bush, "Moses, Moses." "Here I am," Moses replied. I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. When Moses heard this, he covered his face because he was afraid to look at God. And so God pursues him. And in the midst of him just settling in, you know what, I'm just going to be a shepherd for the rest of my life. This is my story. It's not going to be significant. It just is what it is. I blew my opportunity. And so here I am. And in the midst of that, God steps in. And not only does God step in, but as you go on from verse 6, God steps in and says, here's what I want you to do, Moses. I want to send you back to Egypt. Moses, I know you think you're just on the bench. He says, but here's what I want you to do. I'm going to send you back in the game. And you jump down to verse 11. It says, but Moses protested to God, who am I to appear before Pharaoh? Who am I to lead the people of Israel out of Egypt? This is the first one. So God says, here's what I want you to do, Moses. I know you've been on the sideline. I know you've been sitting this thing out. I know you think it's over, but here's the deal. We're going back in. And Moses says, God, no. Who am I? Like, who am I to go back? Which the obvious answer is, you're the perfect person to go back. Like, you've been in the palace, you know what it looks like, you know the people, you know what's going on, who's better? But Moses looks at it and says, who am I? And God continues, he's challenging him. He says, but Moses protests, if I go to the people of Israel and tell them the God of the ancestors has sent me, they will ask me, what is his name? Then what should I tell them? He says, "What? I don't have the right information. I don't have enough information. I don't know your name. And like, you couldn't ask his name. He doesn't ask, well, who do I say? He says, I don't know what to tell him who you are. And so God says, let me give you the answer to that. It says, God replied to Moses, I am who I am. Say this to the people of Israel. I am has sent me. As a matter of fact, Hannah read this passage to us last week. It says, God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel. Yahweh, the God of your ancestors, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my eternal name, my name to remember for all generations. He says, so here's my name. Moses says, who am I? And he says, and I don't even know who you are. What name should I give them? So then he gives them the name. But that doesn't end it. Chapter 4, verse 1, it says, but Moses protested again. What if they won't believe me or listen to me? What if they say the Lord never appeared to you? Then the Lord asked him, what is in your hand? A shepherd's staff, Moses replied. Throw it down to the ground, the Lord told him. So Moses threw down the staff and it turned into a snake. Moses jumped back. Then the Lord told him, reach out and grab its tail. So Moses reached out and grabbed it, and it turned back into a shepherd's staff in his hand. Then the Lord said to Moses, now put your hand inside your cloak. And he begins to give him these miracles. He puts his hand in, he takes it out, and it's covered in leprosy. He puts it back in, and it's healed. The Lord said to Moses, if they do not believe you and are not convinced by the first miraculous sign, they will be convinced by the second sign. But Moses pleaded with the Lord. Oh, Lord, I'm not very good with words. I've never been, and I'm not now. Even though you've spoken to me, I get tongue-tied, and my words get tangled. He said that very clearly. When I read it, I have a hard time reading it, but he said it very clearly. Then the Lord asked Moses, who makes a person's mouth? Who decides whether people speak or do not speak, hear or do not hear, see or do not see? Is it not I, the Lord? And there's this back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And Moses is reaching for all these different things and all these different excuses. Who am I? I'm not the right guy. I don't even know your name. And what if they don't listen to me? They're not going to believe me, and I can't talk. And he's going on and on and on, reaching for all these different reasons, all these different excuses. Whenever you're in a conversation with someone like that, you know what you know? All the reasons they're giving you, they're not the real reason. When you find, right, you're in a conversation with your boyfriend, and all of a sudden there's all these different excuses that start popping out, you're like, okay, none of these are true. So what's the truth behind this? And I think the same thing is true when you look at Moses' story. I don't think Moses is worried about how he talks. I don't think he's worried about whether they'll listen to him. I don't think he's worried. Not first and foremost. I'm not saying that they're not important to them, but he's reaching for things. Why is he reaching for things? Because I think there's something inside of him that says this. You blew your first chance, you'll blow the second one too. It's not just that he blew the first chance. See, Moses has lost any confidence that he could ever be used. You blew the first chance, Moses. Why in the world do you think that it won't be the same again? And I think for a lot of us, this is the way that we look at it. And we wanted so badly to be able to bring the truth of who God is to our family, but we blew it. And so God gives us another opportunity, and we give all these reasons of why we can't or why we couldn't bring it up, but at the core of it is just this nagging sensation that I blew it before, I'm going to blow it again, so why should I even try? Why should I even try? But you experience something about God here that I want you to know about God as well. God knows what's at the heart of Moses' objection. And so you know what he doesn't do? He doesn't give up. And Moses throws out the first objection, and God's like, okay, fine, yeah. Let me take care of that. He throws out the next objection. He says, okay, fine, let me take care of that. Did God need Moses? No. Could he have done it without him? Yeah. Why did he keep trying? Why did he convince him? Why did he even engage Moses in the conversation? This is God. He's sitting there in a conversation with an idiot named Moses, who, to be honest with you, blew it. And God says, we're going back in. I'm giving you another chance. And Moses is like, I don't think so. You know what I would have said? I don't think so either now. I come to give you another chance, and this is your response? You should be grateful I even showed up here today, let alone put on the light show. And you're going to come back to me with this excuse after excuse after excuse? They're not going to listen to me. They're going to listen to you, Moses. They know who you are. They've heard about you. Does it ever shock you that he walks back in and immediately he has access to everyone who's important? You know why he has access to everyone who's important? Because he's Moses. They know who he is. They know about the guy who got pulled out of the river. Everybody knows who he is. He's coming back to him with these excuses, and God just keeps going. Why? Because God needs Moses? No. You know what the scriptures say about Moses later on in his story? They say that Moses became a friend of God. You know what God wanted? He wanted Moses to know him and for him to know Moses. What he wanted was not someone who was going to be able to accomplish something in Egypt that he couldn't. What he wanted was Moses. And so you see, I don't think it mattered whether Moses was going to be successful or not. Because ultimately, the reason that God showed up wasn't because God needed something from Moses. It's because he wanted Moses. And he wanted to have this relationship with him. And so he shows up and says, here, let's get back in the game. And even when this ignorant guy who blew it continues to throw out excuses, God says, no, 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 no. Come on, come on. Come here, come here, come here, come here. I know you think you blew it. Come here. I can still use you. And more importantly, it's not about what we're going to do. It's about us. It's about us. And they begin a journey that will change the world. But I don't think that's what was most important. God could have changed the world with anyone. I think what was most important is that God wanted to know Moses. They begin a journey that changes the world, but I think more importantly, they begin a journey where they become friends. And you know what doesn't happen from this day forward? Moses doesn't get it right. You know that temper that caused him to kill that guy? He continues to struggle with that thing. As a matter of fact, he's actually back at this place several years later where he's experienced God. And God does this amazing thing. God actually writes down on these tablets the Ten Commandments. And he gives them to Moses. He's like, look at this. This is amazing, right? Moses is coming down the mountain, and he sees the nation of Israel, and they started worshiping this calf. It's just terrible. And you know what Moses does? He loses his temper. He takes those things that God gave him, and he throws them and breaks them. Genius. You could have thrown anything, Moses. Like, you had to throw the things that God just gave you. There's another time where God says to Moses, listen, I want to provide water for these people. So what I want you to do is I want you to talk to this rock, and out of this rock there's going to come water. But Moses is so ticked off at the people, he takes his staff he hits the rock. He's got a pretty serious temper problem. He's pretty mad all the time, as you read through the book of Exodus. Actually, he's just so angry at these ignorant people that he's leading around everywhere. And there's several times where he comes to God and he's like, who are these stupid people you gave me? And why do you have me leading them? You know what doesn't happen from this point forward? He doesn't have it all together. You know what does happen? I think from this day forward, Moses gives up on the idea of chances. I think a lot of us live with the idea of chances. But God's going to give you a certain number of chances. So don't blow it. Sometimes I'll have conversations with people and they'll say to me, I'm just so grateful that God gave me a second chance. Some of you are here today and that's the journey that you're on. You've come back to God and you're in this mentality that, you know, I'm just so grateful that God gave me a second chance and I want to make sure I don't blow this second chance, because if I blow this second chance, I don't know if there's another chance. Let me tell you something. Listen. Jesus Christ went to the cross to destroy the idea of chances. To destroy the idea that anybody is counting chances. And if you're here and you're counting chances, let me tell you something. You're the only one counting. Because Because when Jesus Christ went to that cross, he went to that cross and said, I want to pay for all of your blown chances. I want to pay for all of the times that you've blown the chances in the past. I want to pay for all the times that you're going to blow it moving forward. So that here's the thing, from now on, you and me, we don't talk about chances. We don't talk about second chances. We don't talk about third chances. We just talk about where we're going and how we're going to get to know one another better along the way. And I know you're not going to have it together from this point on. I know you're going to continue to struggle. I know you're going to blow it the way that you blew it in the past. But here's the thing. Our relationship, it's not based on chances. For some of you, your relationship with God is so miserable because you're living in the chance world. And you're like, I got to take advantage of this chance. I got to make sure this chance doesn't pass me by. That's not our God. That's not Him. You see, when you step into this relationship with Christ, you step into a relationship with unlimited chances. No more counting. No more counting. And it doesn't matter who you've been, doesn't matter where you've been. The invitation is open to you to come to Jesus Christ. Because of what he did on that cross and how his body was broken for you and his blood was shed for you, the invitation is open for you to come to the cross and step into a relationship with someone who beautifully wants to use you, but not because he needs you, not because he thinks that you're going to really take advantage of this chance, but who beautifully wants to use you because he wants for you to know him. Because he wants for the same to be said about you that was said about Moses, that you became friends. You became a friend of God. You will never be a friend of God. You will never be close to God if you think that he counts chances. But if you'll understand what Moses did, if you'll understand the beauty of the cross and God's grace, that there's no more counting chances, then you'll come to him even when you've blown it. You won't run from him. You'll come to him. And there you'll find a God of limitless chances. Be encouraged. There's no limit to the chances. And he wants to use you in an amazing way. And I think when we give up on the chances, it opens the door for that to begin to become a reality. Will you pray with me? Father, I thank you with all that I have, that there's no limit to the chances. I thank you that even though you did not need Moses, that you continued to pursue him, even in the midst of, really, in the midst of him blowing it again, you continued to pursue him, you engaged him in this argument that you should have walked away from. Thank you for what it demonstrates about who you are, the beauty of your love, the beauty of your passion for Moses. Thank you for how that love was demonstrated through your Son. And the truth is, you should have walked away from us. We've had so many excuses of why we hide from you or why we run from you, and yet you just continue to pursue. You continue to give us chance after chance after chance because although we don't deserve it, you've decided that you want us. Father, I pray for those who are here. I pray that today they'd leave behind the idea of chances. And I pray that they would step into this beautiful reality that ultimately that what you want for them is what you found with Moses, what Moses experienced in you. That you not only want to adopt them as your son or your daughter, but that you want for them to know you as a friend. Father, I pray that that would become their reality. In Jesus' name, amen.